Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Wednesday, January the 22nd. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, a school has been struck down by illness, the residents having to pay to sort sewage on their new build estate, and we hear all about Kent Fire and Rescue's new recruit. But first today, plans for a major transformation of Folkestone Harbour have been rejected. The shock decision came at a meeting last night with councillors on the planning committee, raising concerns about the proposals for new homes and commercial units on the seafront. The ideas had been submitted by Sir Roger De Haan's Folkestone Harbour and Seafront Development Company. If approved, it would have completely changed the skyline in the area. And in fact, you can see pictures of what the development would have looked like by heading to the story at Kent Online. Well, our reporter Oliver Leonard was at that meeting and spoke afterwards to Mark Hourihan, who's from the New Folkestone Society.
So, Mark, you've objected to these plans for a considerable amount of time now. Yep. As the decision was to refuse the application this evening, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm very happy with the result. It's great to see the councillors listening to the people and having their own concerns. It was a considerable debate. We were in there for a few hours. I feel it was given proper thought, which is great. Slightly sceptical about what will happen next, of course. It could go to appeal.
Do you think it will go to appeal?
I think it probably will go to appeal, to be honest. But then it's either going to go to appeal or there'll be a new planning application. Whether they'll listen to the public on the new planning application, if that's the case, who knows?
And were you surprised at the decision when you went in there today? Is that not what you expected?
It is a surprise, actually, because although I know people, you know, there is a major amount of feeling against not necessarily the development as a whole, but certainly the harbour development. Some people dislike the whole thing. Some people didn't mind the crescents, but actually came along and said, you know, this is too much. So, even though, you know, looking at the officer's recommendation, it did feel like a hard task. As the councillors said, you know, the things that they were talking about were quite subjective. So it is a surprise, yeah.
Councillors are now calling on the developers to revisit the proposals following a three-hour debate on them. Oliver's also been chatting to residents to find out how they feel about it.
So, Anna, you spoke at the public meeting tonight as a resident. How long have you lived in Folkestone for?
I've been here for around 3 years. I do work in London, so I divide my time between London and Folkestone.
And what is it that made you sort of fall in love with Folkestone, and why do you like being here?
Oh, wow. It's definitely the views, the easy access to nature. I think the first time when I was like in Folkestone was just after the first pandemic. I came here with my son by train. We had a picnic at 8 in the morning at the Lower Lees. And I think the views, the quiet, the space, it was something that we had been craving for in London. That's why I fear the development at the harbour.
So that's why you spoke so passionately this evening and why, yes, you didn't want it to be
accepted.
I don't
want residents, some of my friends moved here from London, to sort of experience what people experience in big cities, and that's why they escape big cities during weekends, to be close to nature, you know, to enjoy the beach, to enjoy the views, and all the sort of mental health benefits that contact with nature brings. I'm just worried that residents in Folkestone will lose that, and I also worry that with the big development we'll lose the you know, what people love Folkestone for. We lose the, you know, the amount of tourists and guests who come here, which will be obviously a loss to local businesses as well.
Georgina, when I spoke to you earlier this evening, you were incredibly reluctant about what the decision was going to be.
Yes.
But now you've just heard that they have refused the application. Yeah. How are you feeling?
Elated, relieved, and I think it was a really democratic decision. I was thinking we weren't going to get heard as the public and the community. But I'm pleased that the local councillors were behind us and believing that this isn't the right development for the harbour.
So do you think this is sort of the first time the public has been heard on this development?
I think through all of the public consultations we were there, all of us didn't want this development to go ahead. It was renowned, and the percentages were there in the paperwork. But I was thinking it was going to be a sort of tick box process, and this has given me a bit of hope to think that it won't happen. None of us want this, and I don't think it's the right space, and I don't want it to ruin the history of our harbour.
So you have that hope at the moment, but do you think if it does go to appeal, do you think this is the sort of thing that is just going to get pushed through eventually?
I hope not. I'm saying hope again. If it goes to appeal, those councils got to stick by what they believe and what the community believes, so that we can have some trust back in the political system again.
Now, developers could still appeal the decision, and Sir Roger, who used to own Saga, has said that he's very proud of the application. He went on to say, "Our scheme has already had a very positive impact on Folkestone and its economy. This is very important for our town." Well, you can let us know what you think. Perhaps you live in Folkestone or you enjoy visiting there. You can comment on the story or you can leave a message on our socials. You can also follow Kent Online on socials to see pictures of a former office block in Canterbury that's been transformed into housing. The Charterhouse building in St George's Place was previously home to HM Revenue and Customs. It's now been converted into 34 flats.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a warning letter's been sent out by a school in Margate as a number of pupils have fallen ill. Well, Lucy joins me on the podcast with more on this one. Lucy, what school are we talking about?
Well, this is Hartsdown Academy in Margate. It's a secondary school on George V Avenue and has around 750 students. However, we've been told a large number have been taken poorly. As you say, a letter's been sent to parents by head of school Ian Wallace.
And what does the letter say, Lucy?
Well, Mr. Wallace explains that they've had multiple cases of respiratory illness and gastrointestinal illness. He goes on to confirm the school will be staying open and pupils who are well should attend as normal. However, separate guidance has been issued to sixth formers who've been told to study at home, with year 13 only going in for period 4 and 5 lessons.
And I understand parents have been sharing details on how their children are on socials.
Yes, one said her son had been ill since Saturday, had a temperature and had been really wiped out by the illness. Another said her daughter only had 15 students in her class, as everyone else had been sent home. Mums and dads have been told that if their child has a runny nose, sore throat or cough, they can still attend. But if they've got a temperature, they should stay at home until it returns to normal. Anyone who's had sickness or diarrhoea should stay away until 48 hours after symptoms have ended.
Lucy, thank you ever so much. In other education news, Ofsted inspectors have raised concerns about disruptive behaviour at a school in Rochester. A report's also criticised the high number of suspensions at St John Fisher Catholic Comprehensive. The school's been told it must make improvements.
Kent Online reports.
£200,000 worth of cannabis has been found being grown in a building on an industrial estate near Rochester. 500 plants were recovered from Victory Park on the Medway City estate. So far, no one's been arrested. There's a warning about fraudsters who are calling people in Tunbridge Wells pretending to be police officers to try and steal money. A number of intended victims have reported being told criminal activity had been linked to their bank account. One was asked to withdraw cash. Police say they never make such calls. Next today, and people living on an estate near Maidstone say they've had to pay out £50,000 of their own money to try and sort a sewage issue. Blockages, leaks and overspills have been affecting Castor Park in Allington over the past year. Jamie Ross-Davies is one of the residents.
This has been ongoing for the last 18 months, and today we've, because of the issues with the pump station and the sewage line, we've spent circa around 50,000. We are in a position where we're having to organise tankers to manually remove sewage, otherwise sewage spills over. When it fills too high, you can smell it all around the area. That's costing us £2,800 a month, split between 9 residents, so you can imagine the financial burden this is placing on us, and it's a huge stress. And yeah, I mean, we're just desperate to get the issues resolved, but there just doesn't seem to be any light at the tunnel.
Now, developers Clarendon Homes say they are aware of the situation and pipes were installed correctly, but they'll assist residents where possible.
Kent Online reports.
A fire at a house in Gravesend is being investigated. Crews were called to the property on Saddington Street yesterday lunchtime. At its height, four engines were at the scene. Earlier advice to keep windows and doors closed was lifted. A man's been cautioned after a BB gun was painted to look like a real firearm. The 34-year-old was detained following reports of a person behaving suspiciously in Dynamo Way in Gillingham at the weekend. The weapon was found following a search. Southern Water bosses have been grilled by MPs after deciding to increase bills by more than any other firm in the UK. That means customers here in Kent will be among those paying 53% more over the next 5 years. Well, the company's chief executive, Lawrence Gosden, says extra revenue will be spent on improving the network, but admits the money still isn't enough.
We're about £1 billion short of what we really need to provide the investments that our customers are looking for, and that does provide me some significant concern. I realise it's a difficult position because an extra £1 billion would also have actually a relatively modest impact on bills, and that's largely because investment is paid for effectively like a mortgage over the long-term life of the assets, but we are about £1 billion short from the investments that we really need. So that's the first point. The second point, and it's an unpopular thing to say, but the practical reality is that we are running a private company, and we do therefore need a cost of capital that we can actually work with and we can finance the company efficiently on. And that cost of capital is presently too low for current market rates. So that presents us with a challenge. And then the third point on the price review that we're considering is really about the risk and the reward and the penalty structure that sits around the delivery of price controls. The framework is absolutely right. Water companies should and absolutely need to be held to account to deliver for their customers. There is no problem with that at all. But when we're a turnaround company and we're coming from a low performance base through to improving the performance of the company, that means we naturally go through a period of paying penalties before we get the company up to the standard that it needs to be. And those penalties manifest themselves in effectively cuts off our revenues. And if you can imagine, it's sort of like you've fallen over and you're desperately trying to get up. But when it cuts your revenues, that's your lifeblood for being able to deliver change and deliver investment and deliver the things you need. So if you're not careful, that albeit for good reason to have that risk and reward structure, you can end up in a vicious circle when you're getting revenue cuts for performance, which in turn prevent you from being able to sort of get the investment to turn the company around. So those three areas represent challenges. But on the positive side is a substantial improvement on the draft determination, and that is very much welcomed. The capital programme and the overall total expenditure now stands at £8.5 billion, which is about double what we will have delivered in the current regulatory period. So it's a substantial step forwards.
He also insisted the company is making progress on tackling sewage spills and dividends are no longer being paid to shareholders.
Kent Online News.
A heartbreaking story on the podcast now. A Gravesend mum who's been diagnosed with stage 4 brain cancer is calling for better access to scans. Kelly Heather had initially been told she had a non-spreadable melanoma in 2017. She later found the disease was in her lymph nodes, and last month, while she was pregnant, another tumour was discovered. Well, the 38-year-old had pushed for tests after the first diagnosis and has been sharing her story.
When I was initially diagnosed with skin cancer in my finger, it was classed as stage 0 cancer. It's a cancer, but it's not cancer. That was the words that were used to me. And to be told you've got cancer, but it's not cancer. It's a stage 0. It was very insignificant. It was a nothing cancer. It was non-spreadable, and it was classed as in situ, which means non-spreadable. I didn't really know how to take that, because being told you had cancer, like, to me was such a massive deal. But they made it so minimal, so vague. Like, it's you've not even got stage 1. It's 0. It's nothing. I felt disgusting. I felt I had this black cancer growing in my body. and they didn't think it was a big deal. Obviously, they'd done the initial surgery to remove the cancer in my finger. They removed my nail bed. It looked horrible, but it was just on a finger. It was, you know, I could live with that. Within about 6 months, I'd noticed that there was like an ulceration, almost like a verruca style, yeah, coming at the end of my finger again. And I had asked to be seen again. They said they'd take it off and biopsy it, but they don't believe that it is anything to be concerned about. It did come back as cancerous. At this point, they had said to me that they now need to do a small amputation, but they weren't changing the staging of the cancer. They said a cell must have been missed behind. Obviously, I had the amputation, and after that point, I had asked for some further scans to be done, a CT scan, just to make sure that it hadn't spread anywhere, because they said that, you know, they'd got it all, but it came back, and they said, no, it didn't come back, we missed a cell. So I argued and said, but, you know, I want to have a scan just to make sure that I was refused that scan because I was classed as stage zero in situ cancer of a non-spreadable kind. Therefore, I wasn't eligible for those further scans. They were wrong. They were very wrong. Obviously, it then spread to my lymph nodes, and we didn't find that lump for 2 years until it was big enough to feel. I thought for 2 years that I was unwell. Something wasn't right with me. My mental health deteriorated quite drastically over those 2 years. I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I knew there was something. I just didn't feel right. And I had so many to and throws from the doctors of little things, and I just looked like a hypochondriac. But when you know there's something not right with you, and you're, you know, you just know, yeah. And no one believed me. And then to find that, and for them to do the biopsy on it, and for that to come back, I remember being called in for an appointment at Darratt Valley Hospital to be told the news from the biopsy. So for me, the biggest thing is to spread the awareness of the scans are, you know, imperative. If people have got these non-spreadable cancers, everyone should be given an extra check. What's one extra check to a terminal brain cancer diagnosis? No one should be given a stage zero cancer diagnosis that's non-spreadable to then be told a few years later that you might only have a year left to live. I shouldn't be in this position. It should have been picked up way earlier on, and it should have been stopped.
Hospital bosses have told us they ensure patients receive the right personalised cancer treatment as quickly as possible. A fundraiser has also been set up to help Kelly and her family. We've got the link within the story at Kent Online. Two young boys who managed to call 999 when their mum collapsed at home in Ramsgate have been praised for their bravery. Ronnie, who's 8, and 6-year-old Robbie followed instructions to try and wake up Molly before going to get a neighbour for help. They've met ambulance crews and been given certificates. Molly has thankfully made a full recovery.
Kent Online reports.
You're being asked what you think about plans to improve Bluebell Hill to try and reduce the number of delays there. Council planners have come up with ideas for the A229 following an earlier consultation in 2020. The preferred option would see changes to the Bridgewood and Lord Lees roundabouts and part of the road being widened to 3 lanes. Details of where you can see the plans are at Kent Online. There's some great news for families in Folkestone. The sports centre there is set to reopen. It closed suddenly at the end of last July, as the charity running it said they could no longer afford operating costs. A bid has now been accepted by administrators with plans to reopen the site to the public. Now, firefighters in Kent have unveiled their latest piece of kit, a robot. It's one of the first of its kind in the UK and will help keep crews safe as well as reduce the amount of time spent at incidents. Group manager Mark Gosling says it'll allow them to tackle fires more remotely.
It's a great capability to have. What it allows us to do is remotely attack a fire and to put water on a fire, as well as doing an assessment of the situation remotely. So we can work up to 200 metres away, sometimes even more depending on radio conditions, and we can understand what's happening in the fire, have a positive effect in extinguishing that fire, all from a remote location whilst keeping firefighters safe. So really we've got the robot, we see it for 3 main reasons currently. One is all around firefighter safety. We really want to do the most we can to keep our people as safe as possible. One is around speed of incident resolution, so how quickly can we get that incident resolved and return the community back to normality? And two is the amount of resources that we require for an incident. If we can reduce the number of resources that are in attendance to an incident, we can have those resources available elsewhere to provide fire cover for other types of incidents that might come in. So really they're the three things we're looking at deploying this robot for, and what we hope will be an effective capability for us. So it's not so much that the robot itself and the water have applied that will be quicker. What it allows us to do is get into places which were perhaps inaccessible, where we wouldn't put people into those situations. So we'll be able to attack the fire from those locations where we wouldn't expose firefighters to that level of risk, therefore putting out the fire quicker and more effectively, and hopefully thereby resolving the incident much quicker.
You can see pictures of it by heading to the website today. Work's been carried out at Canterbury Golf Club to help boost the UK's turtle dove population. Numbers have been plummeting since the 1960s, but they've been spotted living on land just a mile from the city centre. A new pond has now been installed to help the birds thrive. And finally, it's been confirmed the Medway Gaming Festival won't return this year. The event's been running at Chatham's historic dockyard for the past 4 years, but organisers say it's not financially viable. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. Now, that gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories, and if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word, at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.